Access number 27267, Mr. Frank Luff, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Luff?
Well, I was born in London, in South East London, in Walworth, actually. 24th of February, 1924.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background? You know, what sort of your parents and what sort of life they were leading?
Well, we lived in a block of flats there, just off the New Kent Road. Came from a rather large family. I had seven brothers and one sister.
And what did your parents do for a living?
Well, my mother didn't work, but my father, he worked in a metal foundry not far from Tower Bridge.
And were you reasonably off for the time, or how would you say you were?
On the lower end of the rung, I would have thought, as most people were in those days. I mean, they talk about poverty today, but they don't really know what it really is.
What was it like then? Tell us what it was like for you as growing up in those circumstances.
Well, you never knew what you was going to eat from one day to the next. In fact, although I was the thinnest one of the family, I grew like a beanstalk, and I was sent by the London County Council Education Board then to what they had at open air school at Clapham Common, which meant a journey, and I went there from the age of about 11 to when I was 14 when I left school. And it was a journey of about 3.5-4 miles. I used to have to travel each way each day. And all the lessons were held out in the open.
Well, tell us about your education from the start. Where did you go first?
Oh, first of all, I was on the local school, which was Victory Place School, which was just down the bottom of the street where I lived. But to say, from about the age of 11, I was sent to because I was so thin, I was sent to open air school.
Now, why? What's open air got to do with it? Did you think you got tuberculosis?
No, I hadn't. I was perfectly healthy in that respect, but there was a lot of people there that were sick. And the reason was that you used to get three meals a day there. You used to get breakfast when you arrived. You had a lunch and tea before you left overnight time. And we even had to go on Saturday mornings to school, which is surprising. You know, they talk about now sun screening and keeping out the sun, but there we just used to wear a pair of shorts all during the summer, and the idea was to get as brown as you could. I mean, now it's frowned upon, isn't it?
And this was just on Clapham Common?
Just off the place. It was a school called Stowey House on the south side of Clapham Common. It was a big like country house with the large grounds, and the classes were wooden huts scattered around the grounds. And most of the lessons were done in the open air. There was no electric in the classrooms, so when it got dark, you either had an oil lamp or you packed up and came home.
Now, how did you do at school? I mean, it's an unusual school, but what about your education? How did you fare?
Well, the fact was that the education there was more, what shall I say, manual work, because you used to do a lot of gardening there. Most of our vegetables and that we grew ourselves. The education levels there were very sparse from what I know nowadays, you know. In fact, I thought I was doing pretty well, because I think the last year or 18 months I was at that school, I never hardly done any lessons in the class, because the headmaster used to live in the big house, as I say, at the entrance of the place. And I used to be his runner, and I used to go around the classes and collect the registers and do the tuck shop and so forth, because I just used to go to the classes at the end of the term for tests, and I always done pretty well there. Where the tests was now, I know, was very, very primitive to nowadays.
But you didn't do your certificate, your school certificate?
Oh, no, there's no such thing like that. In fact, when I left school, I got a recommendation that I'd make a perfect gentleman's gentleman.
And you left in 1938,
at the age of 14. That was the general age leaving school then.
Now, what were you going to do when you left school? You know, what did your parents plan for you? What did you plan?
Well, my brother was working in a factory, a leather factory in the city, and he got a job for me there, so I started school immediately there. Started work there, yeah.
And what were you doing in the leather factory?
Well, we used to make all sorts of very high-class leather goods, wallets, expensive handbags, all that type of thing. And I stopped there until the war came. I was still working there when the war came.
Now, did you enjoy the work in the factory? I mean, what were you actually doing? Were you actually doing the sewing, or what were you, or machining, or what were you doing?
Well, it was right from scratch, right, making things right from scratch to finish. I never done the machining, although I can do machining, but you had women machinists there doing the stitching for us, but everything was made by hand in them days. You know, in fact, I carried on with the trade when I came out of the Navy, and I finished up managing a factory for many years.
We'll come back to that. So, but at this stage, you're just learning
the
trade.
That's right.
Now, what about the outbreak of war? What's your memory of the old joke, the day war broke out?
The day war broke out. I remember the sirens going off for the first raid. It was on a Sunday morning, and everybody scattering around, wondering what was going to happen. Nothing ever did. My eldest brother had already been called up with the first lot of militia, you know, for his 6 months training.
Did you actually hear the broadcast?
Yes.
And what did you think of it?
You didn't know quite what to expect. It certainly sent a cold shiver down your spine.
Did you think it would involve you? I mean, you were only 14, 15.
Yeah, 15 then. 15,
but, yeah.
I think it was inevitable that it would, because in some time, you know, just prior to that, we'd been filling up lots of sandbags at work around the, because they're going to use the basement as an air raid shelter, so all the vents and that from there, we was filling up sandbags at work and loading those up during our lunch hour and that sort of thing, making preparations for it. And so then, of course, the first thing then was the fire watching. You used to have to spend nights there fire
now,
was that
straight away, or was that when the blitz started?
No, that was after when the blitz started.
So you carried on working at the leather factory until you were called up.
That's right.
Did it affect the work there?
Well, it did, because first of all, it became it was like luxury items. So we had to sort of get around that by changing the shape of what we was making. Instead of putting pockets and fancy bits inside, we'd put leather straps in them, selling them as tool bags. But basically, it was the same sort of thing. And then they suddenly realised they needed the exports, because we was doing a lot of export work, you know, we did before the war. And so then we got permission to carry on making the good things. And then, of course, in between, we was making lots and lots of gas mask cases, fancy ones for the ladies, rather than walking around with our cardboard boxes, which gave us a bit more work.
And so you just carried on as you were then.
That's right.
Now, what about the other... did you have an air raid shelter? Because you were in flats, weren't you? I mean, what sort of air raid shelter provision was there for you?
If you could imagine, there was... blocks of flats backed onto one another, and we had a yard in between, which I suppose was about something about 10 or 12 feet between the two blocks of flats. And they did build some, like these brick street shelters in there with bunks in, but there was not enough room for everybody else, for everybody in the flats to use them. The only thing is, when we were living there, when things got a bit rough, you know, as they did, we did eventually get bombed there. We lived on the first floor, and beneath us there was the big arch of the entrance to the block, which seemed to be about the strongest part of the block, that we used to go down there rather than try and get into the shelters, but it was always jammed packed anyway.
What was it like in the air raid shelters when you actually got in there? I mean, if you did, I presume you did.
Yeah, the odd occasions we did sleep in there. Very claustrophobic. Very claustrophobic. The wooden bunks three tiers high, and hardly any room to move between the bunks. But we didn't spend more time in there than we really had to.
The other, we'll come to the bombing later, but what about rationing? What sort of an effect did that have, food and clothing rationing?
Clothing I don't suppose mattered too much to us because, we weren't very fashion conscious. We never had the money to spend on clothes anyway. At that particular time, at the beginning of the war, my mother, who was with my youngest sister, the youngest one in the family, sister, she'd been evacuated down into Hampshire at my father's parents' place. The next two were twin brothers, and they were evacuated out of London. And my oldest brother was in the army, so it reduced the size of our family. And my father used to always do night work, so whenever we came home from work, he was always around to have a meal for us. How he managed with the rationing, I don't know, because he always had something there for us. And then we'd say goodbye to him, and he'd go off to work, and we'd see him in the morning.
So, I mean, you just didn't know really, but what, because it wasn't you that did
it. It wasn't me who was doing it then.
What about when the bombing started? That's in September 1940, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
What do you remember of the effect of the bombing?
Well, it wasn't, I can't remember exactly the date it was, but we did have a bomb that hit the block of flats on the opposite side of the street right to our place, and it blew all the front of our building out. Place was completely uninhabitable.
Were you there? What do you remember? Tell us what happened that night.
Well, we happened to be down, we hadn't gone in the shelter that night. When things got a bit rough, we did go downstairs in the block with the big archway there, and there was a couple of recesses that used to go into the flats either side, and we were around that corner from the block, so when the blast came, it came right in the block, and I know there was a one woman there with us, and I was a young, pretty youngling, as you could imagine. I know one of these women, she was dripping with blood everywhere, and somebody came to look after her, and I don't know whatever had happened. I felt completely helpless at that moment. Fortunately, that was the only one in our lot that was under any real distress, apart from the blast shot that we took. But when we did recover ourselves, we tried to get up to our flat. We could get up to the front door, and everything was just completely devastated there. You couldn't get into it. It was too dangerous to get into it. The first thing we done then, as soon as it was daylight, we made our way down to my father's works. We walked down there to tell him what the situation was. And he walked home with us, have a look at the place, and we walked up to the flat, and just inside our door used to be our gas meter. The first thing we noticed, somebody had broke into the gas meter and robbed all the money in that short time. We couldn't obviously live in the flat.
Was that kind of looting common after bombs had hit? Looting,
yes. I know somebody even had all their coal stolen out of their coal cellar. You see it quite a lot of that.
Was any what? Did you know who was doing this?
No. So what we used to do then, we hadn't got anywhere to sleep the night. Where my father worked, they had a, as I say, used to be a shelter there. So we used to go, when we finished work at home, we used to go back to his place and sleep in the shelter they had in the factory, in the foundry there. And that was all right for about a week, 10 days. And we was in there one night, and they dropped a bomb on the on the works there, and the shelter partly caved in. And
what happened? What do you remember of that? I mean, can you describe the scene for us?
Well, it was complete chaos there. Remember, these metal foundries, a lot of them was fueled by diesel oil. And what happened to us that night was, although we was covered in dust and dirt everywhere, our main trouble was we were covered in diesel oil from the burst pipes there. And I was there with two of my brothers. Yeah, it must have been two of my brothers there was with me then. And I'm not sure if it's two or three, two. And they got us out of there, and they took us down to one of the rescue centres, which was in Hartley's Jam Factory, which was just down the road, and in a shelter there. And halfway through the following night, we spent one night there. The following night we went back there again because we got nowhere else to go, and they dropped a bomb in the yard of Hartley's there, and we didn't get hurt there at all, but the noise was terrific because where they dropped the bomb there was all these barrels that had been blown up in the air. They kept crashing her down everywhere. I suppose the barrels there, fruit or whatever it was. And after that, we still hadn't got accommodation. And so we found a place over not far from where I worked in Goswell Road. I worked in St. John Street in the city. And there was a big building in Goswell Road that had a basement there. And so we used to have to take our bedrolls there to work with them. And when we wasn't on fire watching, we'd go there and sleep the night there until we eventually did get accommodation, which was then, we was granted accommodation down in a flat in Camberwell. And we had to go report to the...
And what was that flat like?
Well, that was quite one of the modern council flats that had been built just prior to the war. It was, by our standards then, it was quite something because we did have a bathroom. Although the only way of heating the water for the bathroom was a copper you had in the kitchen, and then you had to pump it by hand into the bath, which was next door. But as I say, it was quite a modern innovation from what we'd had previously because they were just rooms.
Now tell me about the fire watching. Was that with the actual ARP or was it just...
No, it was in the, it was compulsory. The factory where you worked or wherever you worked, two nights a week we used to have to do fire watching there.
And that's at the leather factory?
That's at the leather factory.
Now tell me what a stint, of, what was it like? What would you do on fire watching?
Usually thoroughly enjoy ourselves and play cards or play darts most of the night unless there was a raid on. And then, of course, you had to go up on the roof, and it was a, seven-storey building. So we'd go up on the roof in case we had an incendiary bomb drop around there.
Did you have any equipment to deal with incendiary bombs? Or?
Stirrup pumps and sandbags, sand. That was the only equipment we had. In fact, I was on fire watching there when the... there was a big blitz on the city with fire bombs, but quite a little bit away from us, fortunately. But then, of course, when I was 16, where are we now? 15, 16. As soon as I was 17, I joined the Home Guard.
Now, tell me, that's February 1941.
Yeah, it must have been.
And you joined then? Now tell me about which Home Guard did you join? What was the name of it? Was it a local one or Camberwell?
Yeah, it was in Camberwell, Flodden Road Barracks. It was a part that the King's Royal Rifles we used to, the badge we wore. And being as I was one of the younger ones, I was in their commando unit because there was either people of 17 or they was 45 plus, you know.
Now, tell me about, before we go to the commando side, what was it about, what happened when you first joined them? You know, what sort of basic training did they give you at Flodden Road Barracks?
You obviously got your drill, and then we eventually got issued with rifles. The only thing was there was American rifles we got issued with was 300 bore, and we got issued with 303 ammunition, so we could not use the ammunition in the rifles we had. But... we used to go teaching us street fighting. They'd take us into places, certainly around by Battersea, where there'd been quite a lot of bombing there. And it was teaching us how to do street fighting, going from house to house. And it was the first time I ever come across things they were using then were Bakelite hand grenades.
Tell us about them.
The idea of it was that they were stun grenades rather than the, you know, the heavy metal grenades. And it was the first time I saw a person actually killed. There was three or four of us together there, and one of the officers was showing us how to handle one of these grenades, to throw it in the window of this bombed house. And unfortunately, it didn't hit the window, it hit the wall by the side of the window, and the part of the Bakelite come and hit this fellow right in the forehead and kaput.
Bit worrying?
It was a bit worrying, but after that we gave up using those, and we used to use thunder flash, yeah.
And what else? Was this part of the commando training, the Street Fighter, or was everybody doing this?
No, everybody was. In fact, it was pathetic. They used to go, first of all, they take us into the park down at Campbell Green, and they got these rifles, and now, seeing it now, it's like they used to advance during the Boer War, where you'd be in two columns. The first goes down on their knees to load their rifle, the second column walks through to fire, then they go down on their knees, and the others stand up. And this is how they, we've seen it since, this is how they were fighting during the Boer War, but of course, it was nothing to serve you any good purpose for street fighting. But
what about the commando side? Did you have any
It was only the fact that we were the younger ones, and we was the mobile unit. The one particular task we was on one night where we was fighting, it was another army unit from somewhere or other, and we had to try and blow up Brixton Town Hall. And so we got this old kettle, and we filled it up with rags, soaked them in oil, set light to it, and we managed to get through their troops and put it on the front steps of the town hall, figuratively, to say that we'd blown the place up. It used to be quite fun at times, but of course anything to relate that to really actual fighting was a different matter, wasn't it?
And what about, did you do any guard work or patrol work with them?
We used to have to report twice a week to mount guard at the barracks in case we was called out. We did have a character in our squad that was just like Jeffrey, you know, the old one in Dad's Army. He had one terrible habit that we couldn't get out of. We used to sleep in bunks there in the guard room, in this drill hall, and he had this enamel jerry he used to keep under the bunk, and every time, two or three times in the night, he would pull this out and use it. So we thought we'd get our own back on him. One night before he turned up, we moved the bunk, nailed it to the floor, and watched the reaction during the night. Quite a new thing.
What were we actually doing on guard duty in the barracks? I mean, was there anything happening, or was it really just a routine guard?
It was a routine guard. He was there, ready to be called out if need be.
But you never were?
We never were, no.
What about any patrol work or going out to guard particular facilities, power stations, that sort of thing? You know, did you do any of that?
No, we didn't do that. We used to, as I say, apart from guard duty there, about once a fortnight or something, they take us out on an exercise somewhere to find our way around, to find the back turnings and the shortcuts from here to there and so forth, and the vital points that needed looking after if we had to look after them, that type of thing.
Right, but no actual patrol, so...
No.
Anything else about the Home Guard that you recall?
Well, after I left the Home Guard,
It's just, yes, before we move on from the Home Guard, that's what I mean. Nothing else, right?
No.
So, why did you leave when you... Did you only leave when you went into the forces?
That's right.
So, anything else happened before you were called up?
Not that I can think of, no. Oh, we did get compensation, you know, when we was bombed out. You had to go there and, you know, give your name and address, and they checked up to see that, yes, your house was destroyed. And I think they paid us something like £7, and that was, and some clothing coupons, and that was to replace everything you'd lost. I think it was £7, something in the region.
And what did your dad think of that?
Not much. Not a great deal.
What was the procedure of you being called up then?
Well, you had to register at the age of 16 to make sure that, and then also you had to join some youth activity. I joined the Home Guard. If you never joined that, you had to join the Scouts or the ATC or something like that. And then, of course, you're registered, and at the age of 18, then you got your medical, and then you got your call-up papers. And as soon as I got my call-up papers, I went to see my CO in the Home Guard, and he gave me a letter of recommendation to give to my CO when I arrived at my base.
Now, you were, surprisingly to me, you weren't called up for the Army, despite your Home Guard thing. You were called up for the Navy. How would that happen?
Well, when you went for your medical, they asked you what you wanted to join. I had one brother in the Army then. I'd got one brother in the Air Force, and I had to be different. Although I couldn't swim, I put them for the Navy. So they said, well, what branch do you want to go in the Navy? So I said, signalling. Why do you want to go in signalling? I said, well, my father was a signaller in the First World War. And I really, when I realised the basic education I'd ever received, I suppose it wasn't the ideal place for me to go. But it so turned out I'd done pretty well at it, in my training anyway. And so I asked to go in the Navy, and much to my surprise, I got what I asked for, and as it turned out, I was glad I did.
And you were called up, we seem to have gone to Impregnable, that was your first...
That was
in November 42.
That's right, I got called up on the 11th of November 1942, and a bright day for me, I had to catch the train at Waterloo Station. I'm going up the steps of Waterloo Station, and what do I find? A tension note on the floor.